This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. After the Kalamazoo Promise was launched in 2005, similar scholarship programs started cropping up in communities across the country. New research from the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo examines the impact that those promise programs can have on economic development and population, as well as on college enrollment and graduation rates. The authors of the report are Michelle Miller Adams, a senior researcher, and Ed Smith, a research fellow with the Upjohn Institute. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Gordon. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Gordon.
Is there a particular type of community, and maybe a certain type of program, because not all of these are structured the same, that we could say provides a certain type of benefit or the most benefit to a community?
Sure. I think that mid to small cities and communities serve as an ideal location for many of these programs. I think they offer an ideal size to coordinate and convene the sectors needed to advance these approaches. They typically have the school district sizes that are kind of ideal for supporting some of the models that we discuss, the first dollar scholarships, and typically have a higher education community that can easily be mobilized in an effort to kind of support students once they get on campuses. So we would argue that cities like Kalamazoo, cities like, perhaps as large as Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, are some of the ideal scenes for some of these programs to thrive.
Let's go back, by the way, before we get, I'll let you go over in a second, Michelle, but I want to make sure people know what we're talking about. We say first dollar scholarship.
Right. So scholarships that are awarded before other forms of financial aid, in particular need-based Pell Grants, are considered first dollar scholarships. There are very, very few of them. Kalamazoo has one of them. There's just a handful. A last dollar scholarship requires students to use their need-based aid first, their Pell Grants, then the scholarship is put on top of that. And that's a much more common feature of these promise programs. I also want to point out that there are promise programs as well. If you look at the map in our policy paper, you'll see they really are all over the country. And many of them are in very small towns, very small towns. There's a promise program in Buchanan, about an hour west of here. It's a really small town. And of course, the alignment issues are even easier there. But there are also promise programs in rural areas. The place where we think it would be really hard to get that local prosperity impact is in a big city. And you do experience this to some extent in cities like Pittsburgh or Denver. The promise effects are just smaller relative to the size of the community and what's going on in other parts of the community.
But I can also imagine people thinking, say, a city like Detroit, which does have a promise-like program. It's not like Kalamazoo's. It's different in structure. But it's a city which has had some really tough times, came through bankruptcy, high persistent rates of poverty, where, the opportunity to pay for someone to go to 2 years of community college would be very valuable to people in that community.
It is. And actually, the Detroit Promise Program has a couple of different paths now. It has that two-year regional community college benefit for everyone. And then for students who are higher achieving and can get into four-year institutions, they have that as well. I mean, I think the value in Detroit, it's a little bit challenging because the Detroit Promise is available to all Detroit residents, whether they attend public school, charter schools, of which there are many, private schools. And, in Kalamazoo, the promise is only for the public school system. In Detroit, the promise could have been a tool to reinvigorate the school district, but the program stakeholders wanted to reach all students, not just the school district. And so, in a way, it's kind of a missed opportunity to strengthen the school district, which is a big part of the problem that Detroit continues to face, the weakness of that district.
If I may add, you find that that is the case in other cities within the Promise landscape, that the intention was to have the Promise available to public school students. However, to get either the legislation passed or to have the program seated with the appropriate funding, you'd need to bring in stakeholders. And in many cases, that may be those from charter or parochial institutions or boards governing those institutions. So in some cases, that's how these things happened.
Which brings us to the point, I guess, about design. And again, many communities do this differently than Kalamazoo. If we were to step back and assume that everybody is doing this for a certain reason. Can you say that there are certain ways that you would design a scholarship to get different outcomes than you had in Kalamazoo, which maybe suit that community better than what the donors, the anonymous ones here in Kalamazoo, who, of course, we just have to infer from what they've done, what their goals are. But you can infer that maybe another community had a different idea about what they wanted to accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely. And the program design is critically important because Promise Scholarships always create a set of incentives. And if you get those incentives right to accomplish the goals you want to accomplish, you will accomplish those goals. And so, you know, when we consult with communities, we always push back when they say, well, we'd like to do this. How much will it cost? We push back and say, well, what are you trying to accomplish? What is the goal of your program? So, for example, a program that focuses, as the Kalamazoo program does, on just the public school district, there's clearly an agenda in there somewhere to strengthen the public school district. A program like Detroit or some of the Promise Zones that Ed has studied, you know, perhaps the goal is population in the area as a whole rather than a particular focus on the public schools.
Sure. And I think the set of institutions at which students are permitted to enroll or attend with the scholarship award should align with some of the goals that program leaders have for the community. It could be the case that workforce development and economic competitiveness within the town or city or region is a primary goal. So in that case, you may kind of restrict enrollment to in-district community colleges, perhaps particular academic programs at post-secondary institutions, therefore to kind of build up kind of the skill and talent within the community and draw in some of the businesses to partner with the post-secondary institutions to kind of capitalize on emerging career fields or jobs that still require a bit more talent and skill than is projected at this stage. So in addition to the eligibility criteria and that dimension of program design, the set of permissible institutions, so instead of allowing students to enroll in across the state or across public institutions, and perhaps designating certain institutions or academic programs may be a way of kind of addressing some of the goals we have for the program.
I suppose some people might wonder a little bit about how much a Promise program keeps people in the community. Now, I grew up in a household with two college parents, both who graduated from college. It was expected that me and both my sisters would go to school, go to college. We all did. I don't live in the town where I grew up or where I went to high school. I don't live in the town where I graduated from college. One of my sisters actually lives over just outside London. So you can take that degree and you can go just about anywhere. So what are the things that I suppose someone might say are going to ensure that we, with this program, we have a workforce which is skilled, which is educated, which is going to fill the needs of our community after they have collected their diplomas?
So that is such a great question because there's a lot of confusion around that issue. I think a lot of people assume about Promise programs that you're going to educate these students and then figure out some way to make them stay in the local community. And a handful of programs, two statewide programs in New York and Maryland, in fact, have done that. They've put some provisions into their statewide Promise programs that say you have to stay in state for several years after you get your degree. We think that's a bad idea because the point of going to college and getting that degree is so you can make better decisions about jobs, have more mobility, have more choices, and then to restrict students from being able to do that, it's kind of problematic. But the important point to understand is that Promise programs build an educated populace, not just by growing their own, but actually serving to attract educated people like yourself who maybe went to high school or college elsewhere and choose to locate here. So it's kind of similar to the issue that Southwest Michigan first faces of how to create jobs and business opportunities. Do you just encourage existing businesses to expand, or do you also try to bring new businesses in? You do both of those things. So if you think about like super education-rich communities like Ann Arbor or Chapel Hill, places that you think of as having high concentrations of college graduates, those college graduates did not go to Ann Arbor Public Schools or Chapel Hill Public Schools. They came because the community was attractive to them. So these Promise programs can serve to make the community more attractive to educated people who will then choose to live there and stay there, in part because they want their kids to benefit from the scholarship.
what you're looking for is perhaps a net gain, which is, you know, something else I guess we can talk about here is do promise programs maybe keep some families who would otherwise look at other opportunities, you know, maybe moving to a nearby school district, perhaps, you know, depending on the structure of the promise, private schools, charter schools. Is it more likely that these people are going to stay? And, you know, we hear anecdotally about the people who move to Kalamazoo because they hear about the promise. Do you attract people and also retain people in schools because of promise-like programs?
Right. So I think that premise is empirically based, right? I think there has been some research to suggest that programs such as the Kalamazoo Promise, and there have been others included in analyses, appear to make communities more sticky, as some of the researchers would say. It's harder to leave a community with such a generous benefit that's offered to communities, to students and families. So I think in addition to some of the attractive features that are kind of maintained by at least programs with the design like the Kalamazoo Promise, I think they serve to make it harder to leave the community as well.
And the research that our colleagues have carried out about enrollment in the Kalamazoo Public Schools really shows that. They show that, yes, there are some people moving here, but the big enrollment impact is coming from a reduced exit rate, fewer students leaving the school district. Now, if you have a program that doesn't require you to attend the public school district, you may attach people to the community without attaching them to the school district. There is also some research of multiple communities by some other colleagues of ours that have measured a decline in out-migration from communities with promise programs in them, and it's particularly strong in families with children. So from that, we can draw some conclusions about, as Ed said, promise programs making communities stickier, raising the cost of leaving, as well as making it an attractive place to go.
In a moment ago, Michelle, you mentioned making the schools better. If you create a promise-like program and you don't, just for the sake of argument here, don't change anything else. We have the same teachers. We have the same leadership in the district and in the school buildings. Is there reason to believe that you will still have a better education for those students who come back the next year with, again, the same teachers, the same other circumstances, but a promise-like program in place?
Yes, there is. And the reason is that when you offer to a community, and this is especially true for universal programs, when you say to every child in a school district, we are going to make it financially possible for you to go to college, that changes a lot of the things that go on in the schools, even with the same administrators and the same teachers and the same students. So you tend to see indicators that suggest that a more robust college-going culture is being developed. You might see more college visits, more college awareness, more middle school career discussions. You might see more advanced placement offerings in the high school, increased rates of filling out FAFSA. You might see community members step up in mentorship and tutoring roles to say, let's make sure that all the students who are eligible for this take advantage of it. And we see that in many communities, not just in communities with a very generous program like in Kalamazoo. I know, Ed, in some of the communities that you've studied, some of the promise zones, which are not very generous programs, you've still seen that change in the school district and that change in the community.
Sure. And I'd offer that some of the change is perhaps spawned by the programming that they facilitate and the activities, the college readiness activities that they facilitate with potential scholarship recipients as well as the district at large. So many of these programs facilitate either activities, counseling, or mentorship that help promote college readiness, help accelerate kind of matriculation to post-secondary education settings. So in addition to offering the financial scholarship or the benefit, that may kind of clarify the level of affordability a college may be to students, they help kind of promote information or employ counseling to help them get there. So some of the effects may be in the programming and the activities aside from the cash award available.
And some of it is also attitudinal. And that's where it becomes really important in our opinion. And we mentioned this in our policy work that was just published. about the value of simplicity, simple messaging from an early age about the realistic ability to go to college without bankrupting yourself or your family is really important because that changes expectations of students and their parents, and it changes expectations of teachers as well. So things do change for the good in the educational systems where these programs are located.
You're listening to WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today, I'm speaking with the co-authors of a new policy paper on Promise Scholarship Programs and Economic Prosperity. Michelle Miller Adams is a senior researcher, and Ed Smith is a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo. So Kalamazoo's program is universal. Everybody who graduates from high school in Kalamazoo, assuming that they attend at least from ninth grade on, is eligible for something. People K through 12, of course, are eligible for 100% of tuition and fees. There's no grade point requirement. There's nothing linked to attendance. But it's also not targeted by income. So the child of a fairly wealthy family in Kalamazoo still can take advantage of this, which leads to the question, is it truly helping the people who maybe couldn't afford to go to college? You were just kind of talking about that, Michelle. But does that family still see some benefit, even though everybody in the school district, regardless of wealth, can take advantage?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. There's a debate raging right now, particularly around this issue of statewide promise programs, about their equity impacts. Are these universal programs disproportionately benefiting people who were going to go to college anyway? And that's always the challenge with universal programs. You're going to wind up serving some people who don't have need. But we have to keep in mind that the Kalamazoo Public School District has 70% free and reduced lunch rate. More than two-thirds of students in the schools do have financial need. And so a universal program in a high-poverty school district essentially is targeting poor kids. And this is true for the Promise Zones that Ed has studied as well. You had to have a child poverty rate above the state average to be allowed to form a Promise Zone. You know, I have argued for a long time that even people who are not poor, perhaps not rich people, although I'm not sure how many truly rich people we have in the Kalamazoo Public Schools, but certainly people in the lower to middle class have tremendous need for support, financial support around college going. These are people who are right above the cutoff for need-based aid. There really are no scholarships for them. And the debt problem that we have seen growing around college affordability or unaffordability is really centered heavily on people in the middle class. So, you know, I don't have a problem with sending low-income kids and middle-income kids to college with the Kalamazoo Promise. There's some benefits that come along with that universal eligibility around change in the culture and change in the community that I think far outweigh those maybe handful of wealthy families that are getting support.
So in other words, benefits still there even for someone who would be going to college without something like the Promise. They would find a way to get there, but this is perhaps reducing their debt load down the line, perhaps allowing them to go to a different school.
Perhaps allowing them to go to grad school.
Sure, sure. Or allowing them to start at a community college and have that program paid for, and then transferring to a four-year institution and then perhaps paying for that themselves. But in that case, they would reduce their costs by half, right? Yeah, I mean, there are some substantial considerations that, notwithstanding, we do think that there are some benefits to be achieved by the universal design.
I think the important thing to keep in mind is that there are benefits up and down the income range, but the benefits are different depending on where you are. So at the middle class level, perhaps it means less debt or the ability to go away for college. For low-income families who really didn't intend to go to college at all, it may spur them to go apply for their Pell Grants and take their Promise money and go to college.
Or it may allow many students from low-income backgrounds to pay for non-tuition costs, right? So in the case of a first dollar design, you may have a Pell Grant that, if you go to a community college, it covers your tuition there. However, you could be paying, twice as much to get to the campus, if you have family or work responsibilities, to move around the city, take care of your family. The cost of books and supplies may be, you know, an obstruction, you know, to completing a degree. And in that case, some of these awards allow you to take care of those non-tuition expenses.
So Kalamazoo's program, the Kalamazoo Promise, is entirely funded by private dollars from anonymous donors. Some of these programs have relied on public dollars. How much does that change what you can do with a Promise-like scholarship program?
Well, in my research, I find that that changes things substantially. One, if your public-private partnership relies on initial fundraising, and then the public element relies on revenue that's generated from the community by way of tax, then you certainly have to ensure that the requisite economic development and property levels can ensure that the public part of that model, right? So, you know, I would submit that the model is really either strengthened by economic conditions in the community or threatened by economic conditions in the community. There are other models out there that rely on public funding that, you know, perhaps Michelle can kind of talk about.
Well, as Ed alluded to, though, there are also going to be decisions about program design that are driven by doing this in a political context. The anonymous donors in Kalamazoo had basically complete freedom to do whatever they want, and they still do because we still can't ask them why they did it. But in other communities, particularly when public dollars are involved, which they are in all of the Promise Zones, this issue of including private schools or charter schools, it's very hard not to do that. You know, I'm going to mention another program. There are not that many programs, particularly outside of Michigan, that are funded with public money. I mean, that's not true at the state level, because we have about 17 states that now have statewide Promise programs, and those are all publicly funded. But there's one program in Hammond, Indiana, called College Bound, which is actually a program of the city of Hammond, and so that is public money. And they decided that their top priority for their city was to increase the rate of homeownership. So they only give this scholarship to the children of homeowners. So it's a very direct economic development impact. Probably doesn't have a lot of big impact on the schools because it's not touching that many students, but it has induced some families to buy homes.
So if I'm the owner of the large company in town where a new scholarship program is launched, or I'm the head of the Chamber of Commerce, or perhaps the head of some economic development agency like Southwest Michigan First. But again, let's keep it generic and say this is any town USA. And now this new program's off the ground. What are the things that the business community should be thinking about to try and fully take advantage of this program to, you know, not just help the schools, not just keep people in town, but also grow businesses in that area?
Well, businesses need workers, and they need skilled and educated workers. And particularly at a time like now when there's such low unemployment, it's hard to get those workers. So anything that's going to make your community more attractive to the employees that you're going to need to be recruiting is going to be a plus for you from a business standpoint. If you're in the real estate community, anything that makes it easier for you to sell homes in a given area is going to have a tangible economic benefit. And then, of course, you're going to want to be engaged and aligned with this program. So, for example, you have students going through the program getting trained with the skills and education that are in demand in your community. Community colleges play a really important role here, and that's why it's very helpful to have them at the table, which they almost always are. Community colleges are really good at delivering essentially training and skills-based programs that are customized for the local employer needs. And where there are shortages, they can ramp up training in certain areas. So we have certainly seen that in Kalamazoo, but you see that in many communities. So those are just a few of the things that employers could be thinking about.
I would also add that the business community can play a key role in championing the Promise program, right? So bringing other funders and stakeholders together, using their platforms to do so. I also argue that they can play a role in programming, right? Partnering with these institutions, whether at the K-12 or community college level. And finally, by mentoring students and mentoring emerging professionals.
You know, Pittsburgh has a really interesting Promise program, and the business community in Pittsburgh, which is pretty large and diverse, is very engaged in it. So they have done some, you know, specific engagement efforts where they have students who are Pittsburgh Promise Scholars come and work, you know, essentially as interns in their businesses while they are in college and immediately after. And that creates a career path for the students. It also keeps those students in the community, and it also fulfills the needs of these local businesses. So it's really a win all around.
Well, as you've noted in this interview, and also it's in your report, finding the startup costs can be difficult. Is there a particular type of donor out there? If you're going to do a private donor, you know, a privately funded scholarship, the type of person who you might say they're a little more likely to have the patience because this is a long-term investment that's going to be required to say X number of years down the line, okay, I'm glad I helped start the
whatever
yeah. promise.
Yeah. I mean, you put your finger on the most important thing, which this is a long game. And so you need philanthropists that are willing to take a risk and are willing to be patient, but it's a pretty good risk. And I think the way to think about it is not as a philanthropic gift, but more as an investment. And it's an investment not in a building or a new facility, which is the kind of thing philanthropists are often called upon to fund. It's an investment in a community's human capital, the human infrastructure that's going to keep that community economically vital. And so if you're a philanthropist who has a pretty long time horizon and really wants to be part of making a transformative investment in a given community, this is a great place to do it because the payoffs are high. They're down the road. They're not an economic rate of return in the way that we traditionally measure it, but there's a very high rate of return to these programs.
So, Ed, this is your first time in, so you'll have to get used to the idea that usually at some point in the interview we talk about milestones when it comes to the Kalamazoo Promise. I was noticing that it has now been almost 10 years since the first book about the Kalamazoo Promise, written by one Michelle Miller Adams, was released.
Not long ago, huh?
2009.
Yeah.
So coming in,
okay.
We're almost to 2019. So that leads to the question, though, about how much research has been done and how much do we know what is still out there that we really need to learn about how these programs are working?
We need to learn a lot more. And part of the problem is that a lot of the research that has been done by our colleagues at the Upjohn Institute focuses on the Kalamazoo Promise, which has this unusual, super generous program structure. First dollar continues in perpetuity, 10 years to use your scholarship, deep, deep pocketed donors who apparently are not going to run out of money. We need a lot more research on the impact of the more economically constrained programs. And Ed has started some of that, and as well as some other colleagues of his that have looked at the Michigan Promise Zones. We have some colleagues in other communities that have studied other programs, but a lot of the rigorous research has focused on these first dollar programs, and I think that's problematic.
Sure. I would also argue that a lot more research needs to come to the fore about the impacts on stakeholders as well as communities, higher education institutions, in addition to the students and families. So in many cases, what we know and what's offered in our brief kind of draws upon what is known from the post-secondary effects that kind of these programs help kind of spawn. But, you know, how do colleges and universities experience Promise students as well as the Promise program? Do their enrollments change? Do their financial conditions change? More research needs to emerge on how the communities kind of experience Promise programs as well as states and kind of the political viability of the Promise programs as well.
A really critical issue, too, is this issue of student support. So we know that it's not just the money that makes the difference. It's what the money catalyzes. And so it's the question of here are students who have a scholarship and they're getting some kind of support in high school and in higher ed institutions. You know, what's really driving their success? Is it the support or is it the money or is it the two in tandem with each other? And we have the opportunity to study some of those things locally, which we're excited about. But that's a really big question. If you have a limited amount of money, where do you want to put it for greatest effect?
Michelle Miller Adams is a senior researcher, and Ed Smith is a research fellow with the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo. Thank you both for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks again, Gordon.
You can find the research paper on Promise Scholarship Programs and Local Prosperity at upjohn.org. There is also a link at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.